Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Michael Chakraverty.
And I'm Mark Watson.
And this is the Menkind Podcast. We're going to take a deep dive into masculinity, exploring what being a man actually means, along with a variety of brilliant guests.
You know, men talking about men is a notoriously underrepresented area of podcasting. Not anymore. Hello, everyone. Mark here. It is now February, the month that I turn, 41. And hi, Michael.
After the longest January of all time, we've made it out. Congratulations, everybody.
It's been such a long January that I probably will find I'm something like 48 by the time my birthday does happen, yes. And we kick off this month by talking to the fascinating figure of Jamie Windust.
No, thanks for having me. I've got a milky tea and I'm banging. I'm on the way.
With two shugs, he said.
Two shugs.
I've got a milky tea and I'm banging is very much the mentality we want on the air.
We're often aiming for banging, guys. Yes, Jamie is honestly fascinating, and this conversation is really interesting.
We're always using the word fascinating. I think this every time I listen back. But it's true, they are. What can you do? We just need a thesaurus.
A thesaurus?
Thesaurus?
The emphasis was on the wrong syllable there, Mark.
I've always said thesaurus, but actually you're right. It's weird to differentiate it from a dinosaur, maybe.
We'll talk about this during what you listen to with Jamie, and we'll come back to you with the correct pronunciation. Speak to you in a bit.
Good. Well, Michael, it's that time again where we shuffle somehow into the podcast episode.
Stumble awkwardly. I think you described it earlier as when a child is next to a swimming pool and they're too scared to get in and they don't know how to quite bridge the gap.
Yes, the first 3 or 4 minutes are all both us just basically in ill-fitting swimming shorts gazing down
ill-fitting
into the pool.
How dare you?
So I'm just remembering my own... Well, it wasn't even shorts. You used to have to wear trunks in my school.
I'm not a fan of a trunk.
I should think not, no.
How do you feel about a trunk? Sorry, we haven't introduced our guest.
I think it's good form to at least introduce them before we start asking questions.
This week we have Jamie Windust. They'll introduce themselves in a second. But how do you feel about a trunk?
I'm surprised that you're not a fan of a trunk.
To look at, fine. But like to wear, it's not for me.
Too vulnerable, perhaps? Too revealing?
Do you know what? I'm not actually a massive fan of swimming. Ah. Not because of the water, but because when I was younger, I was a bit more overweight than I am currently. Still overweight, though. And I got bullied a lot for taking my top off. So I just fell out of swimming. Huh. I don't think I've gone back. And it's going quite dark quite quickly.
And if you're not swimming, then I suppose wearing trunks is odd, to be fair.
Well, you wouldn't want to wear it to the shops, would you?
You'd be surprised if you saw that.
Well, quite, yeah. So I think... visually fine, but they're not for me. And also, I just don't quite know where they're like... There was a whole thing of like, where do you put every... Yeah, just like a... Jamie, can you introduce yourself?
I may. I am Jamie Windust. I'm a writer, author, and new one I've added to the roster is cultural commentator, because it's very...
weighty sounding, isn't it?
It's very twatish. And I'm here with you today.
How does one culturally commentate?
Basically just means you've got a Twitter account with an opinion.
So most people are cultural commentators.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Joining in, culturally commentating. But yes, newly published author, writer.
Excellent book. Can you give it a quick mention? Go on.
A quick one, if I must. It is In Their Shoes, and that's all you're getting. Go and find it.
That was quick, to be fair.
The quickest of all plugs.
That was your brief.
It's in.
The first question we like to ask everybody is, when was the first time you realised that masculinity existed? It was a thing.
Now, I used to, for, let's say, from about the ages of 5 to 15, I was mildly forced in a non-forcing way, but taken every weekend to football.
Ah, here we go.
Here we go. Here's the football story.
Mark is getting very excited.
In a way, this is a football podcast with occasional glimpses of other stuff, I see.
Yes. And I think that was my first kind of experience of it, because it was, I tie it in now with the smell of Bovril and meat pies, because that's all you smell at football.
Now,
is it?
This is very interesting. Michael looks absolutely baffled, but to me that was an absolutely non-confusing thing to say.
Just
yeah.
Bovril is like Marmite, correct?
No, yeah, but you know, there's a drink
form of it. I do not know.
It's like, kind of like drinking gravy, isn't it?
Ooh, I have been known to like sneak into the gravy granules packet and just eat a spoonful of the granules.
Yeah.
I mean, I keep telling you you'd be an ideal football fan. Yeah, the sort of iconic, less so these days a bit, but the iconic drink of like football grounds for decades was this, as Jamie says, almost indistinguishable from gravy thing. Also, always too hot to actually drink. It would burn a hole in your tongue. But it comes to the days when everyone was standing, it was freezing cold. Some of this still applies to some football. But so basically, it's almost more like a life support measure than an actual drink. Yeah, and it's true. It's a very, for me, very evocative smell of going to sport.
Football.
Yeah.
And that's tied irrevocably to masculinity.
Yeah, because I was never, I mean, this might come as a shock, but I never would find myself around lots of men at that time. So I would spend like sometimes 2 days a week, here comes the drop, at Plymouth Argyle.
Goodness me. There we go.
Okay. Quickly, to take a pause, I don't understand. So Plymouth Argyle is against...
Well, you see...
I believe you are Bristol.
I'm from Bristol and my team is Bristol City, so things are going to be all right between me and Jamie because there's no real... There's a little bit of a rivalry. As you probably know, football teams tend to have these ludicrous rivalries with the nearest team, but there are nearer teams than Plymouth. In fact, I'm sort of quite fond of Plymouth because their fans are quite a fun... But they also play in green, Michael, which is the only team in the league that do that.
I think Celtic do that, don't they?
Ah, they're from Scotland, though. So they're the only English team to play in...
Don't denigrate my only football knowledge.
And actually, I should say in all green. Like Celtic have got their green and white stripes.
I still have the full kit.
Did you?
Thank you very much.
How did we feel about that?
No. Absolutely
I'm
not.
Struggling to picture it.
I mean...
So you went to Home Park... A lot.
Indeed, yeah. So I'd go to Home Park pretty much every Saturday, all the away games, ferried in the back of the car.
This is very interesting.
So you're not going by choice?
No, not by choice. And it was fine, but I guess that was kind of my first dip into like actual masculinity and kind of, you know, that environment is very hyper-masculine. It's very toxic in a way. It's very overtly masculine. Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. As I kind of got older and became more... of myself, I realised that this was not my space, so I just sit in the corner and play on my Nintendo.
Another theme is gaming. But you say about hyper-masculine and toxically masculine, and what traits did you see that fitted that?
Just kind of like overt aggression. Mm-hmm. I always used to find, and I still do find very funny, when men get really angry, because it's normally at like the tiniest thing, especially in football.
It's very true. I'm speaking as one of those people.
Yeah, it's just like I never understood where that passion came from, because... I didn't care for it.
I really identify with that. I'm like, a ball has been kicked into a net.
Yeah.
I've tried many times to rationalise it, and like a lot of passions, you sort of can't, I suppose. But what's interesting is that very often I'm emotionally consumed by a match, but I still accept that what I'm doing is stupid.
Like,
football is a weird thing where it's not just football that this is about. People
are like
with Bake Off, but you can simultaneously be massively wrapped up in it, and also part of you is watching yourself thinking... What is this about?
Yeah.
But as Jamie says, there are quite a lot of men who go to football who do not make that mental experiment.
It's also worth noting that it's not unique to football. There's things like RuPaul's Drag Race where the fandom can become just as wrapped up and aggressive and genuinely hateful towards something that is essentially people wearing dresses on a stage and being told that it's an ugly dress.
Yeah.
Do you have an opinion on why men specifically are so prone to anger about things that probably even they would admit aren't that important?
I think it's because they often... Like, for example, with football and with, like, a passion, men are socialised to exist in a space where they can't show vulnerability or they can't show, like, happiness or proudness, or they can't feel like they're actually enjoying something because it may appear to someone else that they're vulnerable. So the only one of the ways that they then show that, I guess, is through anger or through kind of just, like, a really strong exertion of energy, which isn't always lovely.
We've talked before about how sometimes you'll see people at football who appear to have come with the intention of being angry. And like, even if their team is winning, even if they're on some level happy, then, as you say, must be about some sort of necessary psychic release or something.
Yeah, it's like a weekend release for them, I guess. But, I mean, whatever floats your boat, I just think it would be more fun if it was nicer for everyone.
And so do I. It's interesting to me, this, because within the realm of football fandom, I see myself as one of the good guys. I'm constantly trying to introduce people to, or not introduce them against their will, but build bridges between the football and non-football communities. And but about maybe 10 years ago, I fronted this campaign called Respect FC. Not my idea, but the idea of it was just to make everyone be a bit less of a dick at football. I'm paraphrasing.
It's a good tagline.
I wish I'd been allowed to do that. Yeah. And lots of people were really nice about it, but lots of other people said, well, the whole point is the aggression, to have enemies, to be... And it depressed me in a way, because it's possible to be massively competitive and partisan about your team, which I am, without actually abusing or upsetting people. And there's, you know, people talk as if you took the element of hatred out of football, it wouldn't be football anymore. And I passionately don't believe that.
You can express disappointment as sadness, not as anger, I think.
Yeah. Because, like, if you look at, like, there were teams that we would always kind of like laugh at, that when we'd go there, we'd be like, watch out. Like, Millwall was always really known for its anger.
Still, yeah.
Yeah, and like, you know, people riot. Like, I remember when the World Cup was on, I lived opposite a pub and it would be like a fight, like just pure screaming energy. I understand it's tied in with nationalism, it's tied in with like being patriotic and all that type of stuff, but I just find it
odd. And so do I. I think a lot of people who are huge football fans, and I love the World Cup, it's one of my like specialist subjects, as we know, but I find it very difficult to watch England games anywhere near pubs or other people, because you start to think, you look around and think, there's more of this that I don't have in common with people than...
I watched the World Cup a couple of years ago, and I did go to pubs to watch it and see, and I could get involved with it, but as soon as the aggression came out, it immediately snapped me out, and I was like, oh, I don't... I was kind of being brought into that world and the aggression pushed me out.
Yeah.
You said quite specifically between 5 and 15. Like, what happened at 15? Where did you go?
Where did I go? Great question. I think I got to an age where I was allowed to actually be at home on my own. So I was allowed to not have to go. And also I was like, I'm a very, even now to this day, I'm a very stubborn person. So I think I was becoming more femme. I was moving more into my identity and sexuality. So I was like, actually, that kind of feeling of being at football had turned from a place of, oh, I just don't like it here, to actually this is like unsafe now.
Yeah.
So I feel like if I went, I'd stick out and I'd be like a target for that potential anger.
Which probably is true, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And something I'd like to ask, I've asked a couple of people this, is, you know, as someone that still is going to football and trying to bring people into that world, what would be helpful things that someone like me could do? Because the idea of it being a sort of threatening atmosphere to people is... yeah, upsetting to me. Are there things that you can do to be an ally?
I think in that football space, it's very easy to almost compartmentalise that environment as, like, what can we change here? But I think for me, whenever I look at spaces like football or people ask me, like, how can I change a space? You know, there are still people in that space. So I think it's more about changing the culture for men in general.
It's a much bigger question. You're right. Yeah. Football is just a focus for a particular type of... Yeah.
Yeah, but I think kind of if you look at the specifics of football... showing more representation within the game, having kind of just, I don't know, just a more comfortable feeling, because there's lots of sporting events where that anger isn't there. Like, I'm sure when Tom Daley was on, he wasn't talking about people punching people in the stands.
No.
And even if you go to rugby, which has been a pretty male space traditionally, you don't see the same.
It's more celebratory.
It is. There is something about football specifically which seems to, as you say, function as something, some sort of emotional punch bag for men in a way that very little else
does.
That's
a very good phrase to put it, an emotional punch bag.
Thank you,
Michael. I like that. 10 out of 10.
I think 8 maybe, but I'm happy with it, yeah. Anyway, so basically it's about changing wider behaviour, obviously, because it's not really a question about football, it's how can we make the world better for more people, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think like opening up that conversation around why men can't exert energy that might make them vulnerable or have emotions that might make them feel vulnerable, because then if they could deal with that and not have to use football necessarily as an outlet for their, like, all of their feelings, it might be a bit more of a safe environment.
Do you think it's getting better? Because there's certainly a lot more talk about men and their emotions than there ever used to be.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely lots of, you know, it's quite topical, but like Marcus Rashford, like, there's lots of people in the game that are actively doing things out of the game.
Yeah.
That are charitable or on mental health lines, or, you know, you've got like Rainbow Laces with Stonewall.
Yeah.
There are lots of initiatives, but I think, unfortunately, like if you look at Rainbow Laces, that's been going on for a long time, but there's still not any out LGBT players in the kind of Premier League or the main
space.
So I think it does boil down to you need to change the people in the space rather than the space.
But also beyond sport, do you think that men are gradually evolving to be better at emotional conversations? Because, again, it feels as if that's much more of a talking point, at least, than it was 10 years ago.
I think definitely. I think there is definitely a movement for men to talk more, especially in kind of my generation and my age group. But I think it needs to be intergenerational.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, like, me and Michael, we've got years between us. No offense.
Only a few.
But we have people, like, in our social media and in our networks that we can look up to that are having these conversations, but then people who are older maybe might not be able to grasp or kind of have accessibility to those conversations.
It's true. I think, I mean, I'm much older than both of you, and I do think that your generation is noticeably good at having conversations that no one has had before.
Yeah, because in the book I write about Klang.
Klang, In Their Shoes, available in all good bookstores now, and Amazon.
From now on, instead of Klang, you should actually drop the book on the floor.
Slap it on the table.
I talk about, like, almost being, not a secret ally, but, like, we need more people to kind of have the conversations in institutions so that it's not just left down to the people of the marginalised identity. Like, the example I gave in the book was about the NHS. And how often that service can be very stressful for trans people and non-binary people because pronouns are not known as well in those spaces. So I think I want people to take that away from those conversations and then go and do the work themselves, even if they don't necessarily identify that way. Because then, for me, if I then go to the doctor and they just know and it's not an issue, even if they give me the option, I'm like, okay, great, this is easy breezy.
Yeah. So you said around 15 you started experimenting with more femme-presenting things, and I know that fashion is a huge thing. We've talked about how a football kit isn't potentially fashion.
I was amazed to hear it, but I guess there are other clothes out there.
I suppose one could. How would one make a football kit more fashion, Jamie?
I am a fan of a knee-high sock sometimes.
Right, okay. We accept the socks.
Yeah, and at least the studs on the boot give you a bit of height.
We could extend the stud.
Yeah, just like stiletto studs, the whole bottom.
Oddly, there are some attempts at kind of, I think there's a culture of making football shirts more sexier and looking because, of course,
do they get belted? Is it a belt?
Cinched.
Does one cinch ones?
I've yet to see that. And also, I've only got the vaguest idea of what you're on about.
Cinching is when you, like, pull in your waist. You're probably explaining this much better than me.
Basically, just belting it at the waist.
Right, yeah,
kind
I
of,
see.
Almost like an hourglass.
Yeah, I can picture that. That's known as cinching.
Mm, yes. Yeah. Cinching one's waist.
I don't think that'll be the last word that I learned.
Give it a go when you go home.
Very interesting.
So, experimenting with fashion, talk to me about fashion and how that influenced how you identified and how you presented. And
the thing with me, and I think the thing with fashion, is people take it very, very seriously. Mm. I did a fashion business degree, and the people in that space were so, so serious, and the industry itself was so serious.
I can only imagine how serious people in a degree like that would be, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, I just use it to have a laugh and have fun. And at 15, I was kind of, I always talk about it as like a coincidental happening that I was exploring fashion as I was then learning more about gender identity. Mm-hmm. And they both fed into each other. So me experimenting more with fashion led to me gaining more access to knowledge on pronouns and transness and the different ways you can exist. And then once I'd unlocked one side, the other side began to flourish. So as soon as I kind of learned more about gender, I was like, this is great. I'm just going to go and wear my stiletto football boots all the time. So
something I need to see now, by the way.
I will make it happen. But yeah, it's fun. I just find it very fun. And I think the issue with it is other people's reaction is what makes it less fun. Mm. But in terms of masculinity, over the past year, my style has really changed into my own version of masculinity.
Cool. Can you say a bit about that? That's interesting.
Yeah, because I used to be like very high femme. So I'd be like full face, like I'd wear a 4-inch heel every day.
Just a quick pause. Yeah. I tried to learn to wear heels this summer. And let me tell you, it didn't work.
Why? What were you doing wrong?
So I think I ended up looking like a bit like a praying mantis when I was walking because
I can really picture you as a praying mantis. Now you said that. Weirdly accurate.
My knees sort of went over my toes, and my whole render body was trying to get balance.
Yeah, you do have to like lean back the whole time.
How?
I've never once thought about the actual logistics of wearing
heels. Genuinely, nor had I until I tried on my friend Ophelia's one point earlier in the year.
Do it.
And I couldn't do it. So if you were to give someone like 3 tips on wearing heels, because you do it so well.
Do you know what? I don't know how I did it because when lockdown came, I was like, obviously didn't wear them. And before that, I had literally worn them pretty much every day for 2 years.
Yeah.
And I was like, how on God's earth do you wear these? You have to really hold your core and you can't just not care about where you're putting the weight in your foot. You have to either put it right to the back or right to the front.
I think it was putting it to the front that made the praying mantis issue. I can picture how it's meant to work, but I can't do it.
Because if you don't, you'll be flying on the tube.
Yeah.
Hashtag heel chat. In case anyone's listening along.
Sorry for interrupting. You were talking about how you've moved into a version of masculinity.
Different form of masculinity, yeah.
Yeah, I think I've always found inspiration in fashion from the 80s.
Right.
So I think for me, I always used to use that as high femme and, you know, big shoulders, cinched waist and have that kind of power with it. And I think what changed is I went through a spell this time last year where the kind of public reaction to my presence physically was so mentally damaging that I was like, for my own sanity, I need to stop, which was really difficult. So I just like, I hadn't done this for about 6 years, and I just said no makeup, no heels, just like traditional clothing.
Traditional for?
Kind of just like slacks, right, shall we say. Just like very kind of bog standard beige attire. And I did that. And then afterwards, I felt completely different about how I presented myself to the world, because I'd always thought to feel non-binary, I need to appear femme, or I need to appear androgynous.
Right.
Whereas once I realised that no matter how I look, I'm still the same identity, which I'd not really grappled with before, I was like, this is great. I feel a lot more comfortable now. So in terms of like masculinity and how I look, I wear a lot of suits now, a lot of kind of tailoring, smart trousers. Most of it is still women's, but it's more, for me, it feels like a nice evolution, because I've been able to still feel as me as possible, but not be overtly high femme, which I used to do a lot.
It's fascinating that you're able to, I mean, you have the freedom, I suppose, to draw from wherever you want to draw from. Do you find that there's a different meaning or connotation attached to different gendered clothing?
In what way, my love?
It came to my mind because you said you wear more women's suits,
right,
rather than men's, and probably because they look better. But aside from that,
yeah,
I guess why is the bottom line?
Yeah, is the experience of wearing a men's suit different from wearing a women's suit internally?
Like, or externally?
Oh, right.
Yeah, I suppose externally as well, really.
No, to be honest, I don't ever really care about the gender of the item. I just care about whether or not I think it looks good.
Yeah.
So, like, for example, the shoes I have on now are from the men's section, but my outfit is...
They are better than both of our shoes.
They're really cool shoes. I was thinking that even before they came
Thank
out.
Thank you. Yeah. But, like, my whole outfit is from the women's. When I go shopping, I do not care where I shop. It's just how it feels on my body and how I think I look. My aesthetic is the only thing that decides what I decide to buy, not what gender it is.
I think it's fascinating to think about you moving from feeling you must present a certain way to be non-binary.
Right.
Which to lots of people, you would assume that if someone is non-binary, that they therefore can be free to do whatever they want. But within that, yeah, there was a sort of a wonder of how to express that. Where do you think that question came from?
I think it came from a bit of this idea of that, you know, there is only one way to look if you're non-binary, which is obviously not correct. But then also because my look became so synonymous with my work. And as my kind of work became more public and my work became more known, I guess, people would always be like, oh, is that Jamie with the face?
Well, you do have a face.
Thank you.
Yeah, they've got you there.
Yes, that's me. No, but like...
Like Becky with the good hair.
Yeah, Jamie with the face. So it'd be like, I almost felt like I had to perform it for other people sometimes. And we all perform gender in lots of ways.
Yeah.
But I felt like sometimes I didn't have control over the person they wanted me to be. For example, if I'd been booked to go do a talk or something where I was going to be seen, I'd be like, right, I need to get into Jamie face. Which I still do now, but it's a lot easier. And the relationship with it is a lot more kind of flexible. For example, in the past now, I would have been like, Michael and Mark need to see Jamie face. Whereas I'm like...
But this is also Jamie face. There's lots of different Jamie faces.
You nailed it, yeah.
Oh, look at that.
Nailed it.
You said that there was sort of one way to look in terms of being non-binary. And I was wondering, as you were kind of developing your identity and learning more about who you are, who could you draw inspiration from? Who were your role models?
Hilariously, I always say me because I don't like to copy people. But I think it's generally the 80s. I've never had one person. But yeah, the 80s, because it was a synonymous time for fashion, but also because it was one of the times that I realised that fashion meant something socially. Like women were dressing in a certain way because there was a power dynamic shift because they wanted to assert themselves. So I always resonate with that. A lot of people say Boy George, but I don't like him, so no.
There was a whole hoo-ha, I think is the technical term, wasn't there?
A whole hoo-ha.
For someone who has a pronoun in their name, they were rather against people using different pronouns.
I didn't know that about Boy George.
Yeah. And also there was a funny hoo-ha on when I got in an Uber once. The driver thought I was an impersonator, so he put Karma Chameleon on for me.
Oh, gosh.
That's a big call. You'd have to be absolutely sure, I think, to do that.
He was like, this one's for you. And I was like, oh, cheers, babe. You'll love it.
That's such a weird thing to do. Yeah. I mean, even if you were a Boy George impersonator, you probably don't want to hear a Boy George song when you've just come off shift.
Yeah, but like, sod off. That's the thing with when I was, you know, when you express yourselves physically in a way that some people have never seen before, boundaries are just lost on so many people.
Mm.
I said it recently in an interview. I was like, people would either come up and be like, I love you, or people would be like, die. There's like no in between.
But either way, they feel more free to express their opinions than they might if you didn't look like that.
Why?
I think it's gaslighting, because people presume that if you look a certain way, you are doing it solely for other people.
Mm-hmm.
So they think you want them to be like, you look brilliant. Whereas actually it's like, sorry, but I already know that, hence why I'm wearing what I'm wearing. I'm not doing it for anyone else's approval.
Yeah, it's a bit like if women are fat, one of my best friends is a proudly fat woman, and an awful lot of the abuse she gets seems to take the position that they are meant to review her, that she is attempting to impress them. And as you say, but also a lot of the positive comments you get also give much more credit to the commenter. Like, I think you're really cool and brave, actually. And in neither extreme of comment is actually welcome, really.
Yeah, I do feel quite bad sometimes when people come up to me and they say nice things, because I am a bitch, so I will treat them... I treat them kind of how I would if someone was saying something horrible, and I just don't reply.
But again, it is unsolicited comment from them, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't really need it. I remember when I would go out and people would be like, why are you wearing that? And I'd be like, why are you wearing that?
Stalemate.
Yeah, why are we all wearing anything?
Why have we all got clothes on? That's
You know what? A very good point.
Because it's like, sorry that I chose my clothes better than you may have this morning. I will not apologise for that.
Again, it's sort of incredible that people would ask that, really. I can imagine it happens every day. But when you actually stop and think, not just what right someone has to ask the question, but on a more fundamental level, as you say, it's just a question that doesn't make any sense, isn't it?
Yeah, like, just ask yourself in your head. Yeah. I don't have an answer.
It's a bit like walking up to someone in a restaurant and saying, why have you eaten that then?
Yeah.
What do you get for that?
What's the point?
You talked quite a lot elsewhere, so we don't need to rehash it, about prejudice that you faced.
Mm.
And I was wondering, when was the first time you recall facing that? When was the first time you remember someone else acting in a prejudiced way against you?
I think it was because I'm originally from Dorset. Right. So it's quite a classic trajectory of like small town gay. But it was as we moved from school into sixth form, we were allowed to wear our own clothes. And that was when I was kind of experimenting more with fashion.
Mm.
And I remember that kind of first day when I was experimenting with what I was wearing, just the reaction, just people just being like absolutely aghast if I'd just come in and like, you know, naked or something.
Aghast is a very good word, just as a quick interjection. I love that. Aghast.
It is a fine word. And it conveys a particular facial expression really well.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm getting.
Yeah. Sometimes a word is so good that we have to stop and just take a minute. Yeah.
Moment silence.
So picturing the scene, sixth form college, everyone is aghast.
Aghast. Colleagues everywhere.
It's just like, I don't know, I remember it. I remember just being like, why is everyone so surprised? And then I remember going into town that day and just like everyone in town just like literally like stopping and just like gawping, another great word. And that was when I was like, what's going on?
You didn't think those clothes choices were as unusual as they were?
No, absolutely. And it was like...
You must have been aware that not that many people around did dress like that, or...?
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, I was aware that it was a bold look. But I think...
But not that people would have such intensity of opinion about it, I suppose.
Yeah.
And where do you think that intensity of opinion comes from? I'm thinking more kind of in general, the responses that you've received that are negative, whether they be abusive, whether they just be someone giving you an eye across a street.
Yeah.
Where do you think those prejudices are based?
I think it's a projection.
Right.
Of other people's insecurity. Because I think whenever anyone sees... And it's not big-headed, but like when anyone ever sees someone that appears confident and is just like... You can tell that they're just being themselves. It's like holding up a mirror to someone, because then they're like, oh, am I doing that? Am I always being myself? Do I feel like I look as me as possible? So I think often people's natural reaction is to like chip away at the person who's doing themselves.
Mm. Yeah.
Because it makes them feel better. They try and kind of pull you down a peg or two.
Yeah, people find confidence and like a sense of contentment in someone else almost unbearable if there's some weakness in their... Well, not weakness, but if there's something that they sense then they're doing suboptimally, definitely.
Yeah, and I think it's a very British thing.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
When I've spoken to, like, Americans, I've recently worked with a lot of Americans, they had that same experience in London. They were like, everyone wants to drag people down. I don't know if it's specifically the UK problem.
Well, certainly British people seem to find it intolerable that Americans, on average, talk themselves up a bit more and comport themselves with a bit more confidence. You'll always hear British people slagging off every single person in the United States because of this culture of saying, I'm great, I'm good, I feel good. But sometimes you do wonder whether that is merely the fact that as British people, we have a terrible relationship with feeling good about ourselves and saying it, at least.
Yeah, absolutely. It just makes me laugh. I just don't understand. It genuinely does baffle me because when I see people out and about that I think look amazing, I would never dream of going up to someone and being like, well, I would if it was like cute and I could manage it. But like, I wouldn't, if I saw someone that I was like, you look shit, I wouldn't go over to them and be like, by the way, you look fucking shit.
I need to tell you.
I don't know if you've seen. You look like shit. Yeah.
There's something in my head. You're talking about the reflections of other people. And I'm thinking back to those football matches that we spoke about at the beginning. And whether the aggression that we're talking about, that insecurity comes from that same projection of themselves and their comparison to themselves.
Yeah, definitely. I think people don't necessarily reflect on themselves enough.
Yeah.
You know, they get so caught up in kind of rules and binaries and, you know, if we look at fashion, lots of people think there are certain things you can only wear because of your body type or certain things you can only wear because of your gender. So I think when they see someone that's just like not adhering to that, they're like, fuck, I've not ever thought of doing that before.
Yeah, it is challenging to someone that's lived for a long time in a particular rut. I think it's about living as the most fully realised version of yourself that you can. If you're not doing that, then deep down you are aware of it on some level and then you're bound to look with fury on people who are.
Yeah, and that's what I always kind of say about being non-binary or gender non-conformity is it helps everyone. If you strip down all of these rules and regulations on fashion, on work, on relationships, it helps everyone because then other people could start to drip feed that into their experience and their lives.
I'm wondering, how did you learn to do that? When did that happen? Because I'm presuming you weren't always this cool and calm and collected.
The thing is, I'm very much not.
Right.
I have a lot of experiences, I guess, that have been that I've had to grow a very thick skin very fast. Yeah. That's often why I get people think I'm like nearly 30 because I'm apparently wise of some...
A sage old owl.
Yeah.
It's true. Every time we have a guest that projects wisdom, we're desperately, hungrily trying to milk it out. yeah. How do you do it? What's your secret?
I think it's this, you know, I'm very honest online as well about how, you know, I'm not always confident. I genuinely don't know how I got to a point where I can just do it. It takes time. And one piece of advice I always give people is take your time.
Yeah.
Especially if you're trans and you're kind of expressing yourself publicly. You need to take your time with it because the world isn't ready for that yet, unfortunately. But I just don't take shit. I just don't take it anymore. So therefore, people can sense that. And also the clothes I wear, some people would say it's intimidating. That also means that I just appear confident a lot of the time. And I am confident in my work and what I do, but you know, we all have wobbles. Mm-hmm. We have wobbly days.
This thing about the world not being ready, which is obviously true as regards trans rights and non-binary and all of it, do you think, it's not an easy question to formulate.
Every episode there's one question where one of us can't word the question. It's normally me, so it's lovely to hear that.
I genuinely reckon this could be a 5-minute, Michael.
Can't wait. Everyone settle in.
Well, there's somebody that...
Or we could put a countdown clock behind it in post.
I think that would be... just in post, yeah. not live. That would absolutely screw me.
I mean, I can sing it if you'd like.
I mean, I hadn't even encountered the idea of non-binary until, I suppose, only a few years ago, really. And I think a lot of people, I'm 40. I suppose my question is, do you think that the whole of the world ought to get used to seeing things in less binary terms, gender or sex or however you express it, as concerned? Like, because presumably being non-binary is, for you works as an expression of who you are, but there must be far more people and far more things that are less binary than we all treat them as.
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, it works and it fits. It's not a new thing.
No.
Non-binary, the word, is just the new evolution of an identity that's existed forever. So it has existed for centuries. And I think people, and again, it's a UK-specific thing, people don't like change. They don't like being told what they can and can't say or do.
Absolutely true, yeah.
Without backed up knowledge.
It amazes me that with the pronouns thing, it's that for me is a mental effort to make each time because it's not an instinct. But it's not a very big effort. I find it incredible that people act as if it's insulting to them to have to do that 2-second long thing. But it's because of change. It's because people think, well, we didn't do that for 50 years. Why am I doing it now?
Exactly, yeah. And like people think it's overtly political. Like my best friend and crush, Lawrence Fox.
Everyone's crush, I guess.
Love him. You know, put something out on Twitter talking about how like the NHS celebrating International Pronouns Day, was like a political stance. No, we're talking now and I'm calling you by your pronouns. I'm not shining my like hammer and sickle because I'm like got a huge political stance. It's just respect.
Yeah, people tend to regard anything as a political pose if they mean I don't really like it. I don't see why it should change. Mm. And also, what's more political than just trying to improve the conditions of life for other people?
Yeah.
Like, everything's politics because everything is about mutual respect, or ought to be.
And I always class it as like an inkling of, you know, pronouns for me are like a gateway almost to whether or not someone respects your identity. If they can't make the effort to sit and understand how to change one word that they actually already use in their language, then they clearly don't have
time. It's going to be a long haul for them to understand who you are as a person. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why my friends always joke with me that I have like a countdown clock on all of my friendships and relationships, because I've never had a friendship that's like been more than like 3-4 years because people don't respect me.
That's a really interesting thing for somebody to say, I think. I mean, you're much younger than me, but do you imagine you'll always have a sort of 3-4 year cutoff point for friendships, or is that something you
has
think
anyone
might...
lasted longer?
I was actually talking today, there's one friend that's she's getting to her 4-year mark.
She's the champion.
How do you celebrate? Do you have like a party for the...
She'll have her appraisal and then
talk about maybe extending it to 5 years or not if it doesn't work for
probation.
Do you think that's an intrinsic part of your personality, or is it just...
I think it's you know, I'm sure we can all relate to this. When your work is often very isolating and you're often put in very like surreal positions with your job, it can create fractions between your friendships, because a lot of my friends have just 9-to-5 jobs in fashion, or you know, very kind of fulfilling but different jobs to me. So I think one thing that I always find is that jealousy and confusion seeps into a lot of that, or people want to try and use me to bolster themselves through my work and my connections. So I think that, combined with the fact that my job is very lonely, means that I often am kind of in a headspace where I'm like, I don't need other people. If someone's pissing me off, I'll just hand them the notice.
Do you have a formal notice procedure?
P45 gets handed it. No, I'm just very... I joke, but I am strict with who I give my time and energy to, because I need people in my word of the year bubble that respect me, understand me, are allies to me as a bare minimum.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Linking into allies, are there any... Let's go with men. Are there any men that you see as allies, or any men that you admire?
To be honest, the men in my life are very few and far between. But the ones that I say are the best allies are either trans men or queer men. Mm-hmm. Because there's an inherent part of them that gets it. And I don't know if you'll relate to this, Michael, but like with cisgendered straight men, there's always part of me that doesn't think they'll understand. So I almost write them off immediately.
Oh, bye.
Yeah.
Mark has now left the room.
No, and it's not, you know, it's not based on my preconceptions. It's just based on my experiences in history.
Yeah, it's based
with
on
men.
Everything that's happened to you, probably.
Yeah.
So, to be fair. Are there things that men like me can do to get past those barriers? Like, is it possible for someone to change your mind just by persistence?
Yeah.
Persistence.
Please. I think one thing, and I'm always, for me, like I always say with men, whether it be romantically or just like generally, is my bar is so low. If a man just like is nice and uses the right pronouns, you know, win-win. Mm-hmm. I think it's just about coming into it and breaking what I presume you're going to do.
Sure, yeah.
Because most men don't do that. So being respectful, actually being educated, using the right pronouns, telling me I look hot, that will all...
That's non-negotiable.
Yeah, non-negotiable. Then your contract can start.
If you were to, you know, build a bear workshops...
Yeah.
We are not sponsored yet.
It's stupid we're not sponsored because you've said it, you've mentioned it three times. Basically, they're sponsoring us, but they just don't have to pay us, which is advertising.
Imagine, like, I mean more, build a man workshop.
Yeah.
If you went in there and you had to put three qualities into each person that identifies as a man, yeah, they have to have these three qualities, what would they be?
I think the first one would just be, like, an inherent kindness. Mm-hmm. I think kindness is something that, if I'm honest, I think men do have. They just don't show it.
Why? Why not? Of course, that was very aggressive. Yeah. Why?
Why?
Does it come aggressive? Down again to this kind of vulnerability being suspect in some ways, and yeah, the act of being kind, does it force you to lower yourself a little bit? Or
yeah, and I think, yeah, or it's something that is often seen as, you know, even feminine. It's seen as, like, weakness to be kind. So I drop a bit of kindness in. I would drop a Welsh accent. Just as a funny one.
That came out of nowhere.
I find it really sexy.
I think the Geordie accent's more attractive than the Welsh, personally.
Oh, just anywhere above London.
We've got kind and Welsh sounding.
Kind and Welsh, Geth and Jones.
I was just going to see if I could think of... Yeah, I think that the Welsh accent is quite a naturally kind-sounding thing as well. So the two do go together so far.
We do.
Will they now throw a third one in, which narrows the Venn diagram dramatically?
It's an odd one, but like what I like to call like listening codes... Which is when often people listen to other people and think that there needs to be an immediate answer. So, for example, like often when I talk to men and I explain a problem, their immediate response is to try and fix it, to try and help you, but to try and, you know, and it can sometimes turn into a victim-blaming situation. So I'd say, like, good listening codes, knowing that sometimes you just listen to someone because they need you to listen to them and you don't need to reply with advice. Or sometimes this person needs your advice... give advice now.
Yeah, perhaps men do have a tendency to think that it is on them to solve everything.
I am man, I must fix.
Yeah, in the same way that if a shelf falls down, not me, but many men will think, well, that's, I must immediately put that back up. It seems similar.
I would call somebody else to come in and have a
look. I certainly would, yeah. Sometimes I get a task rabbit to listen to my friends as well.
But yeah, because as well, like a lot of the time with men, they try and... If they can't empathise with your situation, they'll either tell you you're wrong or just talk about themselves.
Yeah, it's really interesting about the listening.
But also listening to give room as well.
Listening to give room, not listening with a sense of, right, here's what we do about that. Because I think it's a very instinctive thing to think, I'm being asked for help and the only help I can give is to magic these problems away. But that's not how a lot of things work, of course.
Yeah, because sometimes like I have people that I, like in my very dwindling Rolodex of friends.
You said I noticed this week, a couple more friends.
You have painted quite a bleak picture of...
of my life. I do genuinely have, I guess, categories of friends that I'm like, right, this person's a really good listener. This person's really great for advice. This person's good at just for a natter.
Yeah, you can sometimes be friends with someone for years, I find, and not know about a person that they're not actually that... There are big weaknesses in their friendship armoury, like listening, for example. And there are other people about whom the opposite is true, that like you don't necessarily even know them that well, but they're like listening is a skill of its own right, basically, rather than just a function of a friendship.
Yeah, because I've recently made... Actually, I might give him a plug. I've recently made friends with a man.
Oh,
shocking.
My, oh my.
Unfortunately, a taken straight man, but...
It's still a step forward for us, though. Like, it's encouraging for the rest of us.
Yeah. Henry James Garrett.
Oh, wonderful guy, yes.
Who is a wonderful illustrator and author. And he's... Actually, do you know what? Let's give him some love. He has really shaped my relationship, I think, looking at other men. Because on paper, we wouldn't, A, have a lot in common, or B, he wouldn't be able to help me necessarily, or I would just presume he wouldn't be able to kind of empathise or listen. Mm. But he's been, like, absolutely perfect in a year where, you know, I've been everywhere and anywhere mentally. He's... just been like checking in, being lovely, being supportive, being a good listener. And he's not, you know, he's not centering himself, he's not doing anything that is kind of stressful. He's just, you know he's there if you need to have a chat, which I think for me is very rare.
You'll keep him on.
He'll stay on. He's in probation.
Couple of years.
Yeah, a couple, and then I'll Swap.
Yeah, don't go mad.
Yeah, no, he's great.
So you were saying Welsh goes into the Builderman.
Yeah.
Is there a Welsh history with you, Mark, that you want to bring forward?
It is the case that I, my mum is Welsh, half my family is Welsh, and I did use a Welsh accent on stage for the first few years of my career. I couldn't have known at the time how attractive I was being. Well, it was a very, very long range.
Can we hear the Welsh accent?
I wouldn't have thought so, no, because it would now be seen as appropriation. But in those days, we didn't have that word. And also, it didn't feel as if it was an enormous, like, for a start, I grew up 12 miles from Wales, and so much of my family was Welsh that it felt like almost a kind of half-truth. Yeah. But it can now be seen as an astonishingly long-range ploy to capture the heart of Jamie, who at the time was, I suppose, about 7.
It's worked. That small snippet. I'm writing up your contract now.
That's great. I think I can bring a lot to the company.
So now we get to the awkward ending. How do we end? How do you end? Oh, you end things quite regularly, apparently.
Yeah, actually, of all the guests we've had, this is surely the best one to just tell us to go away, basically.
How would you... Can you break up with us? As if we have been a shit friend.
Because both of us probably don't have this life skill either.
It will literally just cut to black. There'll be nothing at the end.
Sure. Thanks for joining me today.
Ominous. Immediately the tone is ominous.
I genuinely feel nervous.
A chill has gone through the room, even though we asked for this.
They've gone very serious.
Yeah.
You
know, I like to be honest, and I think we've had a good run, and we've had some good times, but I'm moving on. So it's been a lovely time, but no longer.
Thank you, Jamie Winston.
The eye contact really hurt. Thank you very much, Jamie. We'll
thank you, Jamie, and don't ever do that to us in real life. That was Jamie Winston, and another eye-opening talk, that was.
Yes, and while you were listening to that, Mark and I have had a brief argument, consulted Google, and it turns out that it's thesaurus, not thesaurus, so he looks stupid now.
I'm prepared to accept the pronunciation overrule, but I will say again, the first time I ever heard the word, my teacher said it... thesaurus, and so I'm sticking to it, and I'm going to dig in.
So we have also found different ways of saying fascinating. We have captivating, beguiling, bewitching, spellbinding.
These are
so
great.
So listen out for those in the future. We're going to use different versions every single week.
Next time we have a guest say something interesting, I'm going to say, well, what a beguiling observation, and they'll look at me like a weirdo.
But we have had a truly bewitching message in from somebody called Richard, who said that Menkind was the first space that he has ever found in which he has heard masculinity discussed openly and frankly from people who want to contribute to understanding the concept rather than defining it. And he really appreciates our work. So thanks us both, but me in particular, and he thinks that you're all right, Mark, but he's thrilled that I've added
I thought you would, yeah. This is the danger of letting you read them out off your phone. But thank you. Well, thank you, Rich. I was absolutely bewitched by that.
Really lovely message from Richard. So please do keep them coming in via our email, which is Mark.
menkindpodcast@gmail.com. Although I wasn't expecting to do that, and that felt like a test, Michael.
It was, but you got it right.
But I have passed the test. And next we have Rick Samada.
And I had older parents as well, so I didn't have that communicative relationship with them about this stuff.
A lot of people have older parents, as people.
That is a solid gag. I'm trying to introspect deeply here, give you some of the pearls of my soul.
If you had to rate it, Rick, out of 10, what would you give him?
Sorry. It was a bit of improvisation, my dear Samada.
And that is why you sit in the big chair.
This was a lively old talk, I think it's fair to say. The episode is misleadingly titled The Safari of Misery, but it's actually one of the more upbeat conversations of the series, I think.
Honestly, really brilliant. So one to look forward to. See you next week.
See you then.
Up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.